chairman of the Asian Banker, renowned industry leader, the moderator of our summit. Let's welcome Mr. Daniel.
Let's kill core banking.
Yes.
Remember that you first heard it at this conference. It's time to kill core banking as we know. For the longest time, some of you come from banks here where it took forever to clean your data centers, to consolidate them, to start putting in place the analytics, to start seeing profiles, static profiles of your customers. There was a time in the 1980s when one bank put together its checking account with its savings account. It took the bank next door 6 years to configure its systems to be able to do the same. 6 years. There are banks in this audience today that have been working on your data center infrastructure for 4 years, for 8 years, for 10 years, and you can still never catch up with the new players that are coming on stream today. What is it that the new players in the market have that traditional banks don't? What is it that makes a Moven, and my friend Brad King, the founder of Moven, to be able to go to market instantly and capture market share of customers from under your feet? What is it that makes a company like Ant Financial to be able to say, you know what, we'll give you a core banking system, we'll put it on the cloud and immediately get 40 banks to sign on and to be able to get services that they weren't able to provide with the traditional core banking systems? This is what a core banking system used to look like. It had something called the CIF, the customer information file, and underneath the CIF sat the general ledger. And on top of the CIF, you put the data infrastructure and so on. And the core banking vendors were selling this proposition of core banking because of a number of reasons. Firstly, because it was expensive. Because they could justify why it is that your institution needed to spend millions of dollars. They used to call it part replacement. Secondly, because they themselves needed to grow. The core banking vendors became larger and larger and larger and had to match the institutions that they needed to serve. But the main reason why we understand core banking the way we do is because of ourselves, because of the complications within our own institutions, because of the number of applications that needed to be consolidated. It's not in the hundreds, it's in the thousands. The patch solutions that you put in place that hangs all of your functionalities together. And you did this on XML. You did this on DB tools today, yes? Then guess what happened? The new players came on board and said, going to market was far more important than the static information that you had at the back end of your systems. And so it was that the new fintech companies that came into the market were able to sell solutions at the application layer that took away the need to have an enterprise approach. And suddenly, many of you started to see banking in a different way, in a tactical way, rather than in an enterprise way. The organization that I come from, the Asian Banker, we run a number of competitions around the regions that we cover, in Asia, in Africa, in the Middle East, and now in Central Asia. And when we run our annual technology competition, we look at all the submissions that come in from all the very different banks that we talk to. And we've seen a change in the submissions coming in. We see a drop in core banking projects that banks run today. And you can see that over the years, core banking projects have dropped in favor of mobility, data analytics, kiosks, self-serving banking. We've all become tactical. There's a war going on, and we want to win the front end of that war. But there's a more interesting reason why we need to think less about core banking and think more about the markets that we go to. Because everything that we've been able to achieve on traditional core banking infrastructure, the hardware that used to sit on an IBM mainframe, can now be serviced out of a server network. The operating system is now an open platform. And even the middleware, and that's where it seems to be where the magic is now a solution rather than a hard-coded application. And so everything that you've been able to do on a proprietary platform, you now are able to do on the network. When we try to figure out where we are going in terms of technology infrastructure and where we've been and what we build over time, we can get a sense of where this is taking us. There was a time there was a focus on modularization of applications. And then we started connecting them together. And then we built the business processes on top of the application so that the business processes mirror the limitations that the applications give us. And then we created open platforms, and there was a lot of happiness that the number of vendors that we needed to use were being broadened out. And then there was a greater focus on the front-end applications, and the concept of service-oriented architecture came into being. And then we dropped the word architecture and talked about services. At this conference, there's a great focus on getting as many banks to become comfortable on the cloud and on using the network as the infrastructure. But you know something? That's already a given. If you're not on the network as an infrastructure, you're not going to be prepared for what there is to come. Just imagine that when all of the applications that sits on your mobile phone starts interacting with each other, the power of your mobile phone is limited only by the energy that is given to it, the battery on which it can function. It can do far more than what it is today. And when IoT comes into being, everything that you do on your mobile phone now becomes doable on a whole host of other devices. And all of the partners that you work with, the APIs, and your customers start interacting with each other. So the agenda cannot possibly be to persuade you to go on the cloud. It's to persuade you of what you're going to do after you go on the cloud. And one of our speakers, and maybe other speakers, will share with you their vision of what that world looks like. We also run a survey in the Asian Banker. We ask banks, how digitized are you? And you know something? Many of you here, you're very proud that you're digitized. We are 80% digitized. We are 90% digitized. No, you're not. Digitization has not even begun. When we look at the P2P lending business, for example, it's grown 15 times, 150% in the last 5 years or 2 years or 3 years or so. And of course, it's grown more in China than in any other country in the world. And for our guests, you know, one of the interesting things about China is that if the same growth took place in the US, it's called innovation. When that growth takes place in China, it's called shadow banking. Somehow there's always a sinister element associated with the free spirit, the learning, the rules breaking that takes place in China, and the entrepreneurship that creates the new world in which we're going into. But even as we think about P2P lending, yes, it's only about 77 billion, maybe it will reach about 100 billion soon. And in China, that's only about 1% of the total assets of banks that banks carry at the moment. But the story is like an iceberg. What's under the iceberg is far greater than what we see today. If P2P exists primarily to enable borrowers and lenders to match with each other online, if you go and visit any of the P2Ps that you know in China or anywhere in the world, there's a lot more taking place offline, even within the P2P players themselves. The institutional investors are looking for tranches of loans to invest in, and those deals are made by phone. The P2P players themselves, when they do a due diligence on their customers, a lot of that is done manually by checking on them, by giving them a call. Yes, they also look at big data, but that's not enough at the moment. And the whole fulfillment process and the whole securitization process, all of that is done manually today. You can actually reflect your own bank's lending business against this profile and say, so much of what you do is still manual. But you know, when it becomes digital, how big it's going to become? We are now entering a phase in the world which I call the financialization of everything. In other words, the financial services industry will financialize anything that it can digitize. That trend started 20, 30 years ago. And we see this most developed in the derivatives, in the futures markets. And what are derivatives? Derivatives are trading on the information against a fixed asset. So the asset may be a mortgage, and on that you build a market of a tranche of mortgages, and on that you build an information about when they are due and so on, and on that the market builds a trading platform in which different players trade it on the cost or the price of that information over time. How big is the derivatives market? It's many times larger than the real economy. The global economy is only about $100 billion in total. The US is about trillion dollars, $100 trillion in total. But both the OTC, which means the derivatives industry that is not traded on a visible exchange, and the traditional derivatives industry are far larger than what the real economy and the real businesses do. And imagine how much larger that's going to become when a lot more of our information is digitized. I want to spend 1 minute putting in place a rule that is going to guide us in the rest of this conference. And that is the rules in a digitized world. What is a digitized world? A digitized world is where information is available to all of the constituents. Take Uber, for example, the taxi trade. What is Uber? When you go out of this building and try to hail a taxi, you don't know how many taxis that there are waiting for you. You don't know what price you need to pay to get a taxi quickly, as opposed to somebody who can wait a little longer. The regulator doesn't know the taxi problem. He doesn't know where the taxis are, that maybe all the taxis in this city are at the airport maybe, and so on. But when information is digitized, the regulator, the customer, the taxi driver, and his competitor all have the same information. And therefore, they're able to use that information to the best of their benefit. And that's what's going to happen in the financial services industry. Your customer will have the same information as you do. Why should a credit card user be given a physical token that does not tell him how much credit he has, how much money he has that he can use, when was the last time he was at the store where he's using the money, or whatever other information that he needs to have in order to make a certain purchase or make a transaction. In the digitized world, already on your mobile phone, and Woven does that, gives you so much more information as a customer that it empowers you, that it makes you feel free to be able to use money in the way that you want to. And it's for that reason that a lot of the competition taking place in the fintech community today are focused on two areas where banks hide information: payments and lending. These are the two areas left where, by hiding information, the global payments network is dominated by six global banks that sets the price of foreign exchange trade that the rest of us buy from. That wall is going to collapse, and collapse soon, as the availability of funds or the availability of currencies in the different markets becomes increasingly more transparent. In the same way, customers will be able to buy loans in the way that they want because that information will be made available to them. And that is why sometimes when we look at the developments taking place in blockchain today and all the news that you read about digital assets and R3, we don't learn, do we? That unless we free that information to become available to our customers, banks cannot dominate the network world. And that is the fatal flaw of the banking approach to information, to digitization, to empowering the customer. So we need to take this view, that we no longer look at our business from inside looking out. We look at our business from the outside looking in. And when we look at the business from the outside looking in, what do we know about our customers? You know, just 20 years ago, the average profile or the net worth of an individual, a lot of it was on fixed assets, on property, on savings and some stuff like that. And today, an average individual, an average wealthy individual, only 50% of his assets are fixed assets. 50% are in tradable assets, in other words, securities, alternative investments, pensions, and so on. So if the profile of your customers has become fungible, meaning it's become liquid, the use of information has to become liquid. And when we start to look at our business and our world from the outside looking in, We also need to start asking ourselves, how should we be organized? If this is the way we are organized in the traditional way, where you have a chairman and a CEO and a head of business and a head of technology and so on in a hierarchical way, we will not be able to make use of the way in which the network technology world is evolving. Maybe in future we should be organized in clusters. So these are some initial thoughts that I have in my mind as I start today's session. And it will be built on our thought leaders and our practitioners, and especially the better banks that have figured it out, that are making decisions that enable them to break away from traditional banking infrastructure as they've known it and embrace the brave new world that has been created. Let's kill for banking as we do.